You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the Game, yeah, Building the Game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, February 22nd, 2016. You're listening to episode 195. My name's Rob. Sitting there holding up his phone for me so I can see the calendar is Mr. Jason Slingerland.
Hey.
The reason Jason is holding up his phone is because my phone is occupied at the moment. There's a gentleman on the phone, on my phone, right now, who is very kind and generous and patient with us for time. And he's someone that... It's very dear to my heart, honestly, and someone who, so I care very deeply for, someone who's just really contributed to reducing my anxiety level to a large degree. And I'll explain what I mean by that. But first I have to introduce Evan Derrick. Hi, Evan.
Hi, Rob. I'm going to make a guy blush.
Aw. How's it going?
It is going very well.
Fantastic. Evan is working with AJ as a part of Van Ryder Games right now. And Evan, the reason that he is so dear to me now is Evan is the guy who has taken Saloon Tycoon and made it look freaking amazing. So I owe you big for that one, buddy.
Well, I can't. First of all, it's a great game, so it was easy to make it look good. Second of all, I did the art direction and the graphic design for it, but I owe a huge debt to the artist, which she's Polish, and I cannot pronounce, we call her Inez. So her art on the tiles for the game, the characters, is just fantastic, and we were very, very fortunate to have her be a part of the project.
Yeah, absolutely. I second that. The art is better than I ever imagined. I mean, frankly, as I was, you know, working on the game, I dreamed that the tiles would be that sort of top-down look of rooms, but I never imagined it to be the kind of thing that anybody could pull off. So I just couldn't be happier.
I realize that neither of us are objective, but seriously... We're not overselling it. The tiles are gorgeous. They really are. That is not an exaggeration.
Yeah, phenomenal. And in fact, when this episode's put, because we're recording this episode a little early, actually before the Kickstarter launches, but by the time this episode goes up, builders out there, you guys will be able to go to Kickstarter and check out the Saloon Tycoon campaign that's going on right now and see a lot of that spectacular art augmented by Evan's incredible graphic design skills.
Yes, so hopefully right now we have overfunded by 10,000% and we're coasting on our way to riches and glory.
Yeah.
Which is why we all do this.
That's it, to get rich. That's why I design games. Well, how about you, Jason?
Do
you,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, right. It's worked out real well so far. So.
Evan, people probably know you from a little game that kind of took BGG by storm. Why don't you tell us about that?
The game I designed, the published official, I can buy it in the stores game, is Dark Moon, published by Stronghold Games. But it began its life as kind of a truncated, expressed version of Fantasy Flight's Battlestar Galactica, a game I love, but also rarely, now that I have three children, I rarely have time to play 3 to 4 hour games.
Yeah,
and so I wanted that same experience in a much shorter package. And there's kind of the Express craze, the Dice craze. Every game seems to get a Dice version. So these days you've got Bonanza, the Bonanza Dice game, and Walking Dead, the Dice game, and just Dice games everywhere. So I basically took Battlestar Galactica and turned it into a Dice game, called it BSG Express. And it was... my first design, and now that I've designed many more games, I think I kind of got a little lucky that the first one worked as well as it did. I remember designing it and playing it. Seriously, this is my very first design. Designing and playing it and thinking, man, this is pretty good. I'm, like, really good at this. And then I started designing other games, and that was when I realized that, oh, this is harder than I thought it would be. But BSG Express was downloaded like 4,000 to 5,000 times. I created a print and play for it. It was downloaded 4,000 to 5,000 times, and then Stephen Bonacor was gracious enough to pick it up, and it's been really successful and done really well. Obviously, it's no longer in the Battlestar universe, but it maintains a lot of the same feels. So,
yeah, super cool. Fascinating story too. And I, you know, I don't know if there are any. Hopefully, there are a lot of aspiring designers in our audience, but it's fun to talk about those weird situations where your first one's a big hit. And appreciate that when it happens, but know not to expect it. I think it's a good thing for people to hear and keep in mind.
Yeah, I've designed, I mean, I have tons of prototypes sitting on the shelf gathering dust. I remember my first act of hubris after the success of Battlestar Galactica Express was I thought I'd design a game in 2 weeks to pitch to Z-Man. And everybody told me, like, you can't design a game in 2 weeks. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm awesome at this. Watch me. And I designed it, and I pitched it to Zev, who runs Z-Man. And we sat and played it. And while we were playing it, and I looked over at his face, and I realized, this game is the biggest steaming turd ever, and it sucks. He hates it. And I am not nearly as good at this as I thought I was.
Yeah, that's funny. I had a similar experience actually with Slim Tycoon a couple of years ago, pitching that to somebody at Gen Con. I won't say who. I think it's kind of a famous story for builders on the podcast where, I mean, basically from minute one, the guy I was showing it to was more interested in his phone and on making sure his phone was plugged into his portable battery charger than actually paying attention to playing the game. And just, you know, just from minute one, it was a poor experience, and I probably should have called it off after about 5 minutes, but I kept hoping. I kept hoping maybe I'd be able to bring him around. But lesson learned, and in fact, the feedback I got from that is almost... It made me change the game by almost 50% and directly led to Slim Tycoon as it is today. So it was worth it. Every experience like that is definitely worth having.
There is unfortunately no substitute for hard work.
Yeah.
So there's no shortcuts, and maybe some games will just explode out of your head onto the paper perfectly, but those are very, very, very rare. One of my good friends who is a real successful designer, Stephen Glenn, who designed Balloon Cup, but more recently, Spike with R&R, First and Goal, Rattlebones. Anyway, he has a game that's published over in Germany by Cosmos called Loomis, and it is a fantastic game, and the published game is virtually unchanged from the very first prototype we played.
Nice. Wow.
It was perfect on the table. I remember sitting there and playing with it and cussing at him. because I was so angry that he had made such an incredible game and had never even tested it. It was just perfect. But then he also had other designs. Spike, which he sold to R&R, went through probably 20 major revisions and took 4 years to create. And it took him forever to hammer that out. So sometimes designs just come naturally, but rarely does that happen. For the most part, it's agonizing, painful work to try to find the good game in what is probably a block of painful awfulness.
Yeah, I have a lot of blocks. I think Jason and I both have a lot of painful, awful blocks that we have to
quite a few
chew up and spit out before we occasionally find something that actually has something tasty inside.
Yes.
Yeah, mixing analogies. That's fun. Saloon Tycoon is on Kickstarter right now. All indications are, builders, you know better than we do right now, but all indications are that it's a smashing success.
Yep.
And I couldn't be happier. with how it's going, and couldn't be happier with the reception that we've been getting. I have to ask you a question because we got to take a look at the Kickstarter page today, kind of an early version of it. It's as of this recording, not completely finalized, but I think the smartest thing that was done as a part of that, and it never even occurred to me to do this, but it's brilliant, was to put an animated GIF on the page showing what it's like to actually build a stack the cubes and then tiles to build your saloon. And I got to know, whose idea was that? Was that you or AJ?
That was my idea.
All right.
I will take credit for that one.
Good. Cause it's a freaking great idea, because I know that a lot of times I look at Kickstarter at work. Right. And I don't like to spend a lot of time watching videos when I'm
right.
at work, you know?
Yeah, it's hard.
So if I'm cruising through a Kickstarter, through just the list of games, and if I see a name or a splash picture that looks interesting, I'll click on that and I'll look at the campaign, but I will not watch the video. I'll just scroll through and look at pictures of the stuff in there. And seeing that pop up there and watching that thing grow on the campaign page without having to watch a video tells you right away how this game works and,
yep.
and what you're going to experience in the game. And I think that's super compelling and I love it. And thank you for having that idea.
That's a good one. That's a really good idea.
You're welcome. I had it last night.
Well, you put it together quickly.
I did. So, actually I'm also creating some of the advertisements we're running on BoardGameGeek.
Uh-huh.
And I had shown an ad to one of my friends and he had said, well, it's good, but I mean, I really want, if the big selling point is that you kind of build up, shouldn't you just see the tiles grow? So actually, maybe I can't take credit. Maybe it was his idea. And I was like, you know what? He's right. The inspiration for that really comes from kind of real world data. When we had the game at Board Game Geek Con, just uh-huh. sitting out, it caught the vertical nature of the game, the fact that you build up. It's a tile laying game that goes not just horizontally, but vertically, really caught people's attention. We probably had, I mean, there's a lot of eye candy at conventions like that. There's a lot of things to distract, but we probably had 30 or 40 people alone who gave us their email addresses because they were so taken with what the game looked like. They didn't even play it. No one even played it. And so from that, what really told me was, and we knew, obviously, having picked up the game and signed it, we knew that that was a big selling point for it. That was a huge part of its curb appeal.
Sure.
But just watching people's reaction at Board Game Geek Con really confirmed that. So I'm really glad we were able to put the GIF up on the page and that it worked. And that it does, I was able to get it under 5 megs. The first GIF I made was 60 megs.
Holy crap!
Yeah, I had to shrink it down a little bit. But I think I think you're right, because I'm the same way, Rob. I don't watch a lot of Kickstarter videos. I'm very, just like, oh gosh, another 2-minute video. And I just kind of want to glance at the page real quick. And if something catches my eye, then I might spend a little more time watching the video.
Yep.
Well, it's so many times, and I have to be honest, I when I looked at the page, I forgot to click on the video because, like Rob, I'm so programmed to not click on the video. There have been a lot of times when I've watched a Kickstarter video, and it's actually made me not want to back a game that I was going to back. So I don't watch videos for the same reason, because like the video can, I'm sure your video is great. I haven't watched it.
Well, yeah, it's not up there yet.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, never mind. I don't even have to feel bad about it. But like so many times the videos are not good.
Yeah.
And they're boring. And then like the game loses energy, right? Like I go to that page. I'm like, this game looks so great. And then I hit play and then it's like, hey, let me tell you about this game in the most boring way possible. And then I'm like, yeah, right.
So
yeah, right. I mean, and there's a way to do exactly that and make it fun. And I've seen AJ's videos before and he always does a good job with that. But and I'm sure with you on board that'll make that even easier. But it's funny because having the animated GIF probably will make less people watch the video, which is cool, right? Because they immediately see that and think, "Oh wow, I get the game. That's all I needed to know."
Yeah.
Right? Because basically, when I go to the Kickstarter page, what I want to see is, show me the sexiest thing about your game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for Saloon Tycoon, that's it, right? I mean, that is That's what gets your attention.
Yep.
That's what says back me. Stop now. Back me, and right. then move on, and then learn how to play the game later, because that doesn't matter, right? Yeah. Show me why I want this game now. Show me why I can't pass that up. And I think more people should do the animated GIF thing, because I think for a lot of games that would actually be useful. Obviously, absolutely. For this game, it's like perfect, right?
Yeah.
And I think there are other games where it would be not as useful, but any game with kind of an interesting mechanic that uh-huh. you can encapsulate in 5 or 6 pictures, that's, yeah, totally do that. Start a trend
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
It'll make Rob and I's laziness on Kickstarter be way easier.
We're all about accommodating lazy people.
That's right. What you want to do, right? You want to make it as easy as it possible for someone to back you.
Yep.
Here's the littlest information you need to want to back this game.
Yep.
Done.
That's very true. And my day job is in marketing. I market films and movies and entertainment properties for a living. So that's what we're always going for when we're looking at movie trailers or anything. What is the clearest, cleanest way I can sell you on this? Because people's attention span is just so slight. You don't get a lot of their time anymore. So thankfully, Saloon Tycoon has such a great visual presence, and we just... I'm very thankful. Figured out a way to deliver that information quickly. At least at that point, if you don't want to back it, I mean, you've got a pretty good indication of what the game is and whether you'll like it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, yeah, because, I mean, there's somebody who could be looking for something really sucky and boring and dull, and they see that and think, that looks like way too much fun for me.
Yeah.
I shouldn't back this game. You know, and that happens, right? I mean,
sure, I
go to a Kickstarter page, I'm like, that game looks like so much fun, but I'm not fun, so why would I back that game?
Well, Rob, you and I can experience the joy. This is my first, although AJ has done this 3 or 4 times now, this is my first time being this integral in launching a Kickstarter campaign. So you and I can experience the joy and emotional highs and lows of it together.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. I just can't wait, man.
I'm excited too, but it is quite frankly nerve-wracking.
Yeah. Yeah, so as of this recording, we're about a little less than 48 hours out from the launch, I probably won't sleep much in the next 2 nights. I think in terms of the podcast stuff, Jason and I are going to try and record some little short
reaction video.
Reaction stuff, yeah.
On Thursday, right?
Yeah.
So you'll actually hear that, because we might as well just publish that,
yeah, you're
right
away.
As well. I mean, just, in fact... We could even not even edit it and literally publish it right away.
Yeah. Yeah. So
if
we
record it on our phones, we can actually do that.
Yeah, totally.
We can just upload it straight to Google Drive. I can port it over the site and we can put it out there.
Yeah.
So thanks,
yeah.
Listeners. You needed to understand that process as we talk through it.
Thanks for helping with that, Evan.
I don't see, I mean, if it's like a 5-10 minute thing, and then we'll just throw it out there. Do it as a bonus ep, super raw bonus episode.
Yeah.
I think that's cool because it also creates more attention for the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Because it'll be right then.
Right. So, yeah, we're going to document the crap out of this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, but enough talking about Saloon Tycoon. Enough talking about Saloon Tycoon, the greatest game of all time. We brought you on here for another reason as well. We already talked about, Evan, how you are a graphic designer, and we wanted to speak with you. We never really had the opportunity to talk to somebody with your experience and your skills about how graphic design can help game design and help somebody interface with a game experience. I'd like to start by asking for your thoughts on why good graphic design is important to help somebody have fun with a game.
Good graphic design is essentially how you communicate information. And the best design, you'll hear this quote a lot from, you know, designers, if you read about it or study it for design that covers all kinds of different areas, is that good design is 99% invisible. So if you're looking at something and you don't even notice the design, That is good design. A very obvious reason for that is the freeway, the signs, the interstate signs for the freeway system. Mm-hmm. You never ever think, oh, well, that's, you know, you're never processing the design of those signs. But an enormous amount of thought went into the font, all that, to be able to communicate to people traveling very fast and communicate to them quickly where they need to go. And so people aren't processing the design of that, but it's absolutely crucial and even sometimes a matter of life and death. So that carries over to games as well. Not that it's life or death, but that good design will naturally create a enjoyable experience for players that they won't even be able to necessarily put their finger on. It's very simple in the way that information is conveyed. When you're sitting there, especially with a complex game, and you have to juggle a lot of different things and be able to glance at that person's board and that person's card and your own and the main board, and be able to parse all of this data so that you can make a good decision. Well, the fun of the game is being able to make that decision. The fun of the game isn't having trouble reading the font or looking over at a guy and his very important card with his special power is upside down in front of him and you can't read it. And so now it's just like, wait, what does that power do again? And you gotta, hey, can you show me that card? Like, that's not fun. No one wants to think about that stuff. They want to think about playing the game. So good design should always facilitate the free and easy flow of information for people. And a lot of games suffer with this, and there are some very good examples out there that don't. But so that's why design is so important. You really don't want to be wasting time trying to figure out what you're looking at. You want to be spending time just making those decisions and enjoying the flow of the game.
And that totally makes sense. So I'm not going to ask you to call out some bad examples, but I wonder if maybe you could mention a few examples that you think are well designed, well presented, that really help the game.
Let's see. I think that one designer I really like, his name is Heiko Gunther. He's German. He did the graphic design for Tesla versus Edison. He also did the graphic design for the Glory to Rome retheme, which some people don't actually like that very much. But he did Tesla versus Edison. He also did a game called Tomorrow. And those games have very clean design, and they... especially like Tomorrow has a world map. It's just very easy to kind of parse the information and see what's there. Another really good example of great design is Eclipse. There's an enormous amount of moving parts in that, but because of how the boards are designed and the way the cubes kind of fit, you kind of remove cubes when you're doing things. It just makes it facilitates a complex system in a very easy, intuitive manner. You don't ever feel like you're fighting against the game or the information. It delivers the information to you very quickly and easily. And the design actually facilitates that. I remember playing that and thinking, oh, this is so intuitive. I think that oftentimes that's the trigger for when a game is has good design or bad design. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, that's so intuitive. I just get that. You just get it right off the bat. Versus, can you explain that to me for the fourth time? And why is it written like that? And what? What is that? I don't understand it, but I guess I'll go with that.
Gotcha. Did you have a question?
I was going to say, I was going to back up what you were saying. I was going to say that a graphic designer I really like, who is also an artist, is Adam McIver. He's done some work for Green Couch Games and some others. One of the interesting things that I just kind of wonder what your thoughts of this are. So he does, like, he's been hired a few times I've seen on games to do the art and the graphic design. So it all just kind of flows, right? Because it's, and I'm just curious, have you seen that with other designs, or do you have thoughts on that? The idea that the graphic designer is doing both, right? The art and the design. Do you feel like that can put you too close to it or give you the right perspective?
I think that probably for the most part, that's actually an asset, unfortunately. There's slightly different skill sets that don't always overlap.
I actually was wondering the same thing, is like, you could be an awesome graphic designer who can't draw, right?
Which is me, unfortunately. But a good illustrator kind of understands like color and perspective and composition.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that a lot of times. There's just a lot of really bad examples of games that just have poor composition. The faces are just kind of laid out and just not very attractive looking. So a good illustrator kind of gets all that. But a good designer knows how to convey information well. I think some, like Adam, another really good one is, and he's more of a like quadruple threat, is, gosh, his name's skipping me right now, the guy who did Above and Below.
The guy who, like, I don't remember his name. He literally, like, publishes his own games, designs all the games, does all the art and the graphic design, and everything looks amazing.
His output, Ryan Laucat.
Yes.
His output is exhausting, but he also is a very talented illustrator and also a very talented graphic designer. I think for the most part, those people are rare.
Oh, gosh, I'd have to expect that.
But I think if you can find one person to do both, that is a huge asset and a huge plus.
Cool.
I don't think there's a problem at all. Now, oftentimes, you might have a bad illustrator and a bad designer who they could both. I mean, heck, I could illustrate games. That doesn't mean they'll be good.
Right.
Do it though. But yes, I think if an illustrator can do graphic design too, that's a huge asset.
Cool. I just was curious about your opinion on that. Knowing that you just do the graphic design side.
I would totally do the illustration if I could.
Right. Right.
I'm interested in your thoughts on icons, because I kind of enjoy looking at game icons and thinking What I don't like is seeing a game with really bad iconography that doesn't help. Doesn't help me play the game. And having done just some minor projects on my own, picking the right icons creating the right icons is incredibly challenging for me. So I'm curious about your thoughts on that subject.
Picking the right icons can be very challenging. I mean, for Saloon Tycoon, to give you a real-world example, we had to do icons that allow you to play a card and icons that allow you to draw cards. And I'm happy with what we got out of it, but it's not as perfect as it could have been. There still could be some confusion between which is which. Wait, which one is drawing a card and which one is playing a card? And it makes sense kind of once you look at it for a little while, but those kinds of things can be very, very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. I think bad iconography in the hobby game space mostly comes from publishers' utter insistence on creating games that are language independent. So they can. So if a partner comes along and wants to pick it up and do it in another language, the license is much more attractive to them because they don't actually have to reskin the game or translate it or redo the art or anything.
Just basically translate the rules and put it out there.
Exactly. And so you'll see a lot of Euro games that have super obtuse iconography because it was very clear that the instruction was given to the designer. You have to communicate this without using any words, which I think is a mistake. I think that iconography, you should never work to make icons that support very complex rules, I think that they should be combined with language to supplement one another. So actually, I think that's where most bad icons come from. I'll play Euros, and I'm like, oh, come on, guys, you could have put some text on here. I didn't know this action that is actually four different things in a row. One icon is not successfully representing what I do here.
Yeah, you know, and when I was working on the Saloon Tycoon, every tile has a bonus that you get after you finish giving it all its supply cubes, and that bonus for me. There's also a cost on there, right? And it's so for me, that bonus and all that information was just text printed on the tile. And I always knew that at some point, if somebody published it, they would want art on that tile and not just a bunch of text. But I never put any effort into figuring out that problem about how to turn that text into an icon so that there was room for art. And I'm glad that was a problem that you and AJ had to solve and not me, because I wouldn't have even known where to start.
I worked really hard at solving that, because each tile has a number of pieces of information. One is the cost of the tile. Two is the prerequisite. So some tiles you have to have previously built other tiles. And then third is the bonus. And so... But as I thought through it, I didn't want to cover up Inez's beautiful art. I wanted that to breathe as much as possible. If you see the tiles for Castles of Mad King Ludwig, it's a fantastic game, and it has a lot more rules associated with each of the tiles. So I don't even know if there's a way to do it, but the icons have to kind of cover it up. Cover up the art, and so I wanted to try very hard not to do that. So I figured I managed to put only some of the information on the back of the tile, and then once you've purchased it and you flip it over, then you don't need to know how much the thing cost anymore. You didn't even need to know what the prerequisite was. Now all you need to know is what you get when you finish supplying it.
That's smart.
And so I'm really, really pleased with how that turned out, but in part I could only do that because your design is very minimalist and simple. It's simple enough that we didn't need an enormous amount of information on the tiles. So, thank you.
Well, thank you. I don't want to dwell too much on all this stuff. I guess to kind of close out the subject. Maybe you have some advice for game designers or some pointers for them to think about as they're polishing their design and getting ready to put it in front of a publisher or even getting ready to put it on Kickstarter on their own. I wonder if you have any thoughts or recommendations to them to think about in terms of giving their design room for good presentation.
I think that there's a lot of debate, I think, within the game design community. I've had these conversations with a number of people about how good your prototype has to look. There are some people who invest hours and hours and hours, a lot of time, to making their prototypes look really nice. There's other people who just kind of scratch it out in index cards. But the reality is that when you present it to a publisher, you're not presenting it to... You're presenting it to someone who has a lot of knowledge and a lot of know-how in the industry, but you're also presenting it to someone who may have already looked at four or five different designs that day. Whatever is special about your game might not be immediately obvious. You might have had to beg for this meeting with them. They might be busy and running on. So you need to figure out how to clear as many hurdles as possible for that publisher to figure out whether they want to take your game or not. And one of the ways you can do that is by even thinking at that stage about the design and how you convey information. Because maybe you have a fantastic game, but your prototype is laid out really poorly. And so you could sit down with a publisher who might really love your game, but because they can't figure out your cards or how things work or whatever, it just falls flat. So always think about how can I clear as many hurdles as possible for this person to take my game, to like it, and to love it. Maybe they won't, but I don't want anything to stand in the way. So how can I figure that out? So I think those kinds of things are, as a designer, you should absolutely, definitely spend time thinking about and not rely on, they see crappy prototypes all the time. I'm just going to whip it together and the game will shine through for them or won't. Because it might not.
Sure. Excellent. Excellent advice. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great.
So we're going to move on to practicing the pitch. And I know this that you don't have a lot of experience with building the game here, but hopefully you are ready to pitch us a game idea. Does that sound good?
Yes.
All right. So, game idea. All right. I guess take it away.
Okay. All right. So this is one I've had percolating for a while. I've never designed it, but I still think it's amazing. So I'm gonna pitch it to you right now.
Okay.
All right. It is a game that simulates a Hong Kong action movie fight scene, like a Mexican standoff. You're in a warehouse, and there's ninjas, and there's guys with guns, and it's like Chow Yun Fat and John Woo, and one guy's flying across the room with two guns in his hand. Another guy's got a bazooka, and he's firing it. Then you've got a female ninja in the corner who's swinging on the chandelier, and she flips across the table and goes into the corner before grabbing a grenade and throwing it across and blowing up the other guy. It's a game that creates that experience. And it does it in a way that's very similar to Robo Rally with programmed actions. So every player takes a character. The board would be kind of a hex grid or a grid with everything laid out. So there would be furniture and banisters and obstacles all over the board, and you would have a figure that would represent you, but your figure would be unique, and you'd have special abilities and powers, but you would plan out your whole move beforehand. So maybe you play a card that says, okay, I'm going to flip over this barrel, and then you play one that says, okay, and then I'm going to pull out my gun and shoot that guy in the corner. And then you're going to play another one that says, okay, now I'm going to dodge because at this point I'm kind of in the middle of the room and I think someone's going to hit me. But then the next card you play is going to be, okay, now I'm going to pull out my knife and stab this guy in the neck because I think he's going to be there at that point in time. You're basically trying to plan out your move and anticipate where everybody else is going to be. And then much like Robo Rally, you flip the cards over one at a time and watch the whole thing kind of play out. And maybe you plan it really well and you're in the right moment and you stab the guy in the neck and it's brilliant. Or maybe you totally mess up and you run into the wall in the corner because you didn't anticipate that the big guy on the left was going to punch you in the face halfway through. So I call it Action Movie. It's a very basic title, very simple, gets the point across, and I think that would be a fantastic game, and you should absolutely play it and publish it.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun, yeah.
Doesn't that sound like a great game?
It's it sounds fantastic. Okay, so let's see. I want to think about how a turn of the game would go. So is everybody going to program... is everybody going to be able to have the same number of cards to put down in every turn, or is that tied to specific characters?
For the most part, yes. There would be very simple rules, but then each character would break certain rules. So yes, it would be like just like in Robo Rally, you plan out a sequence of six or seven cards. But also in Robo Rally, as you get wounded, you're only able to take fewer and fewer actions. Obviously, when you get your hand cut off, you're not going to be able to do as much. But then some characters might break that. So maybe very agile characters will be able to swap out cards in between after they've kind of seen what everybody else is doing. Or really, really strong, bulky characters won't play as many cards because they're much slower or they'll move much slower. But for the most part, there will be a standard rule set. Everybody will play the same number of cards, but then certain characters, based on their powers, will be able to change the order or change the number of cards they play and so on and so forth.
Okay.
It would be cool in that, to throw an idea out here, it'd be cool in that if to win the game, it was to rack up body count, right? So instead of me being the female ninja or whatever, and when I play the game, there are decks of cards off to the side, right? And all these characters. And the person with the lowest body count, because you're basically, you've got a room, say, of 20 characters, and the goal is to kill all those characters.
So or have NPCs one left, right? Out there?
The whole game. Picture the whole game is NPCs. You don't own anyone, right?
Oh.
So on your turn, at the end of a round, right? At the end of a round, you take the person with the lowest body count, and they pick which deck they want, which person they want to be for the next round, right? So I pick up their deck, set it in front of me, and it goes around until everyone's done that, and then we program them. So that way, you're not always the same hero. Every round, you're playing the tough guy this round, the ninja that round, and you can look at, like, okay, so I'm low, I've only killed 4 people, and I need to try and get my body count up. Well, the guy with the machine gun in the corner, it looks like the guy with the bazooka is in a really good position to take like 3 people out this turn. So I'm going for it. And then that makes it cool that if your guy dies mid turn, no big. You next turn, you're going to pick first, right? Because you did the worst that turn. So that might be kind of fun to make it seem even more chaotic so that you can always just pick someone new during the game. Everyone's up for grabs.
That's a cool way, especially to fix the problem of player elimination.
Right.
I don't know if you guys have played Robo Rally, but it's chaotic. It can also be frustrating when you get pushed off into the pit and you didn't have anything. You really couldn't do a whole lot about it. I think that's pretty funny, but I've played it with other people and they get very upset about that.
They think it's less funny?
They find it much less funny. So a lot of that could be, okay, we'll design this game that you can get eliminated very quickly, and then we'll try that. And if no one has any fun, then we have to figure out ways to keep players invested in the game. And your suggestion could totally be a way that you're still able to have fun, but people can still be invested even if they get eliminated and they don't feel like they're out of it.
Yeah, and I have not played Robo Rally because I've heard people who say that they don't enjoy it and it's just very frustrating. So it's not been at the top of my list to try.
It's such a great design. It really is. It's pretty genius, I think, the way Richard Garfield did the programmed movement. And it fits with the theme so well. The fact that you have programmed these robots and they kind of just trundle off and like roll into the pit. You really have to approach it with like a very kind of like, you have to laugh when it happens. I find that it's interesting. I find those kinds of games fun when other people beat me up like that. What I don't find fun is when the game itself does that. I hate playing Galaxy Trucker, even though I really respect the design, because I feel like the game just arbitrarily destroys my spaceship every time, and it makes me sad.
Sure, yep.
I love Robo Rally. So this could be the kind of game where maybe if you made it fast enough and if people did get eliminated, it wouldn't be as painful. But that is that's a very good point, Jason, for how do you keep people involved in a game that's really about killing everybody else?
Mm-hmm. And I imagine some attacks would be, so with the hex grid, part of your programming would be to choose your direction of attack, or would everything always be kind of nearest target direction? Or
man, I think you could do whatever you want. It would all be about anticipating what other people are going to do. So you kind of look at what they're going to do, and you're like, I think that guy is going to run to the corner and hide behind that barrel because he needs to heal. So what I'm going to do is run over there so I can be in the right position to stab him, and he can't do anything about it. It's all about, but then maybe that guy doesn't do that at all. Maybe he goes completely the other direction, and now you've run over to the corner and you like really place yourself in a bad position because you completely read what he was going to do wrong.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's going to be the next one you work on then, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
along with the 4 or 5 other awesome ideas I have too.
Because they're all great ideas, right? Every single one.
Some of them are pretty. That one I think is pretty good because that doesn't exist. I don't think that game doesn't exist. No. I don't know of that game other than maybe some kind of miniatures based wargaming.
But probably not with programmed movement like that.
No, but not a not something that doesn't require a big thick book and minis and right. modular terrain and rulers to measure how far you are from the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It probably, you know, the tighter the area too, the better for that, you know, like you wouldn't want to have little, you know, 3/4 inch hexes across a, you know, massive game board. You would probably want it to be pretty tight space in which to move.
We could even have big enough hexes that more than one person could fit on one at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think the trick would, and how I would want to design it and make it, is that to make play really fast. Like, just make people die really quickly and make it really violent and bloody, and you just die, so that games take at most 30 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's the right way to do it.
I think that if you played a 1.5 or a 2-hour version of this, you'd just want to kill yourself.
You'd be like programming yourself to jump into the pit.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to go stand in the middle of the room. You guys do whatever you want to me.
I'm
going to
go eat some nachos.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Well, I like it. So it's called Action Movie. Is that what you said?
My titles tend to be very super basic and descriptive starting out.
Yeah, me too. I'm terrible with titles.
from a marketing standpoint, it might not be the sexiest title in the world, but if you were to see a game called Action Movie, even without knowing anything about it, you would already have a pretty good idea in your head what it was.
It's true. That's true. Cool.
I thought about calling it Mexican Standoff, but I feel like that could be in poor taste. I'm not sure.
Well, a Mexican Standoff for me is a very specific thing. I mean, that's what Cash and Guns is, right? That's yes. the Mexican yeah. Standoff game.
Yeah, where everyone's pointing guns at everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I think they should rename that game Mexican Standoff.
Maybe they didn't because they were afraid it was going to be in poor taste.
Yeah, it could be.
The original version, the art in the original version actually was in quite poor taste.
I think
that's the version that I own.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And the art's, yeah, no, it's
bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
stereotypes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny because I was going to say that. And then you said the art in the original version. I remember that at Gen Con 2 years ago, we saw a new version of it.
Yeah.
And gosh, what do people yell when they point their guns at each other?
I don't remember.
I just remember we were waiting to do a demo, or you and Christine, your wife, were doing a demo, and I was watching you, and they were playing Cash and Guns next to me, and whatever they yell when they point the guns at each other, after like 15 minutes, I wanted to join the game and just start flipping tables, because I was like, shut up. I don't remember what it was, but it was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I'd been playing, I probably would have felt differently.
Yeah. But think about the guys working in that booth that had to hear that all day, every day, for 4 days.
Man, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I like it. I like it, and I think you should work on it.
When slave drivers like Rob Couch aren't designing games that I have to make art for, I will.
Hey, AJ is a slave driver, not me. Okay, so let's recap here. Everybody should go out and back Saloon Tycoon. If you haven't already, if you already have, thank you so much. Please go back and increase your pledge. If you have not yet backed Saloon Tycoon, you should go do that right now. And thank you in advance. We really appreciate it. You should also go out and find yourself a copy of Dark Moon from Stronghold Games because it is awesome. And what else do you want to plug, sir?
Really, I mean, right now it really is Saloon Tycoon. So, I mean, please... I realize, again, Rob's the designer, and I am the publisher. So we are not objective at all. We are beyond objective, but trust me, it is a very good game. It is a fantastic gateway game. It's got beautiful art. We poured our hearts. Everybody has poured their heart and their soul into it. It is just a really great value. You will not be disappointed. So. Yeah.
Yep, and just in $40 for a copy, that's a steal. That's a steal.
Steal away. Steal all those copies from us.
Yes. Please.
I do want to say that last week we talked about a secret stretch goal. Mm-hmm. And I looked and I did not see a secret stretch goal listed on there. I was disappointed, but I think I can say this. And if I can't, Rob will cut it out. But there was a stretch goal that was a Kickstarter exclusive. That's probably the Scorpion in the Box, guys. So it is probably the live Scorpion in the Box.
Yeah, sorry, Evan, you don't know what he's talking about.
It's all right, you'll figure it out when you open that box, Evan. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, we were talking about rattlesnakes, but scorpions are a good alternative.
Rattlesnakes are overdone. I think scorpions are... Plus, scorpions glow under black lights, so...
It's going to be a great PR moment. Van Ryder game.
If you send it out, like when you send it out for like the CISPA testing, I would definitely not include the Scorpion in the box. That seems like a bad idea. So yeah. People, by the way, Rob, were still tweeting about that, like, as really? Of a couple days ago.
Oh, nice.
That's what made me. I think today someone tweeted something Scorpion in the box. I was like, dudes,
nice.
So yeah.
Okay, so Evan, what's the best way if somebody wants to learn more about Saloon Tycoon, about Van Ryder Games, about you? What is the best way for them to track all that stuff down?
Best way to learn about Saloon Tycoon is to go to Kickstarter.com and type in Saloon Tycoon in the search bar. The best way to learn about Van Ryder and what we're doing is go to VanRyderGames.com, and Ryder is spelled with a Y, so R-Y-D-E-R. VanRyderGames.com.
And on Twitter, it's at Van Ryder, or is it? I don't.
It's at Van Ryder Games.
Thank you. And on Twitter, you are.
It better be at Van Ryder Games. yes, it is at Van Ryder Games.
All right.
At Evan Derrick.
All right.
Pretty
cool.
Basic.
Well, so that's that. So Evan, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. We really appreciate it. I think it's been an entertaining conversation, and graphic design really is something that we have not talked about before. We focus so much on the game design portion of it, and it's unfortunately something that I think too many people neglect to spend the amount of time on and give enough thought to. So thanks for your information, your input on that.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me and listening to me babble about stuff.
That's a joy. And builders out there, thank you guys for listening. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can follow us on Twitter at PodcastBTG. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. I am at Poorly_Designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and all those good things. You can call our Google Voice number and leave us messages at 770-TEL-BTG. You can back Saloon Tycoon on Kickstarter right now. You can check out our website, buildingthegamepodcast.com, and send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. And I think that's all of our stuff. So one more time, Evan, thank you again.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
And good night, everyone.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Hey, builders, just a little cap here on the end of the show. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate that again. And we are now several days into the campaign. I'm recording this at about noon on Sunday, the 21st. So right now, looking at the campaign, we are at 389 backers, $23,948 pledged of our $20,000 goal. So we are over the goal. We made it. We made it in less than 48 hours, which is freaking amazing. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who backed. We got a long way to go still. Plenty of time to get these numbers up to reach some stretch goals. Wanted to recap for you guys a few of those goals here. If you haven't checked out the campaign yet, or if you've been missing our bonus episodes, because we funded in less than 48 hours, AJ went ahead and unlocked one of the stretch goals for free. So that was to upgrade all the cards to a linen finish from a flat finish, and which is always cool. Next goal at $25,000, which we're very close to, instead of all the golden games, instead of being just flat cardboard tokens, it's going to be plastic gold nuggets, acrylic nuggets, which I think is crazy cool. Now, already, if you back the game at the deluxe level, you can get fool's gold, actual chunks of pyrite to use for gold nuggets, and that's amazing. But if you don't want to spend the extra for that, we need to make it to the $25,000 level so you can get plastic nuggets, which are so much better than just cardboard tokens. So I think we're going to hit that real soon. After that, at $30,000, we're going to get thicker tiles, heavier weight tiles, which will only improve the experience. You know, the game where you're stacking cubes and tiles and building things upward. So the thicker, heavier tiles are really add to the awesome feel of that. Then at $35,000, he's got our first mini expansion, which is the underground expansion featuring two new tiles, the cellar and the vault. And then at $40,000, another expansion, the outskirts mini expansion, which adds in the outhouse and the garden tiles. Guys, we've got to make it to $40,000 so you can unlock that expansion. I love those two tiles. I think that they're super cool. Can't wait for the art to come in for those because I'm excited about seeing them. The outhouse and the garden tiles, I'm just telling you, you got to get us there. We've got to get there, and I know that we can do it. So thank you again so much for all of your support, for your passion for the project. You guys clearly have shown how much you believe in the game, how much you support what we're doing here for the podcast. And I couldn't be more appreciative. If you know anybody out there who you think might like the game and hasn't seen it yet, please share it with them. Share it on Twitter, share it on Facebook. Help us out to reach these goals. It's just going to make it better for everybody who's backing the game. So that's enough. Crazy success. This is mind-blowing. This is better than I ever could have dreamed for. So thank you guys so much. And Jason and I will probably do another update sometime later in the week. So you can look forward to that. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.